That can be our intermission.
Sessionable.
Come on, lover. Fucker up. Boy, give me another. No kiss will be a waste.
All right, welcome to Sessionable. We've got a pretty fun episode lined up. It's an episode about sour beers, and we have a guest in the studio, right?
Studio.
Chippendale.
So I'd like to introduce a friend of the show, very good friend of a lot of us, Bronwyn.
Hi, guys.
Welcome to Sessionable.
Long-time listener, first-time speaker.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Bronwyn, before we get started, I guess.
So I was always a beer drinker, and when I moved to Sydney, I guess I discovered the depth that there is in beer and found myself working in a beer pub that gave me quite a lot of freedom to pick a lot of different things, attempt to put together my own beer list, which was quite cool. And then from there, I now work for a brewery. So I work for the Little Brewing Company as their Sydney sales rep.
Awesome.
Yeah, very different side of the industry, but just as much beer drinking goes on. Tends to be during daylight hours as opposed to the midnight.
Yeah.
Midnight.
And you've
shuffle.
Always been a bit of a fan of sour beers, right?
Yeah, I definitely found sour beers to be something that probably piqued my interest more than other beers styles. Initially, I think one of the first beers that could count as a sour that I ever remember drinking was the Lindeman's Peach Dress, and that was something that I also got people to drink that didn't necessarily like beer, so that was something that was interesting to me. And then doing research in it and finding out about how they actually made the process, well, what the process was to make the beer, was definitely quite interesting.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah. Talk about a bit about that,
later on.
Later on, yeah.
Spoilers alert.
I think the Peach Dress was my little brother's first,
legal beer. Yeah, it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't drink anything else, no. And so we made him drink that.
He came into the bar dressed in his school uniform.
Really?
He just graduated his formal assembly.
His birthday, his 18th birthday.
What's the rules about serving someone in a school uniform?
Not at our bar, there wasn't.
I knew it was over 18, it was his birthday.
Yeah.
So that was... Yeah. Because it's definitely one you can just give to someone. We should probably say what we're drinking at the moment as well. So we thought with our sour episode, we'd start off with an Aussie sour. So what have we got, guys?
We've got the Temple Scarlet Sour from Melbourne.
So this is an old bottle. This is pre...
This is version 1.0?
Yeah.
1.0,
of Temple?
Yeah, Temple 1.0.
Oh, not really. Yeah.
Yeah. So they opened in 2011, I believe, and then... closed earlier this year due to some...
Around the time of Good Beer Week.
Yeah, financial reasons,
early 2013,
I think.
Yeah.
And then they managed to reopen recently.
Yeah, they've got a new investor that's come on board who was actually involved with running gyms before, who's never dealt with microbrew, but just really got along with the owners. So Ron and Renata are really nice people if you get to know them. And
they're great.
They managed to find a contact that was going to give them the creative freedom to run it how they want. So I think that's what they wanted. And they've relaunched with a couple of beers. Yeah. This sour hasn't come out yet, but I think, fingers crossed, it will make a reappearance soon.
Excellent.
So, I had a chance to go to the Temple Brewery 2 years ago, so not long after they reopened, and really impressed with some of their beers.
Yeah.
The black IPA was...
Oh, the midnight.
I recently had the double version of that.
How's that?
It's pretty intense.
Yeah.
It's one of those beers that if you have that, you don't want to have anything else for the rest of the day because it's just destroyed your palate. It's really strong. Yeah. It's really hoppy. Really dark.
You could say you're savouring the flavour.
The honey saison. I think we've talked about that before.
I think we have, yeah.
And the Weizen is really good. It's an example of that style, I think.
In fact, it was so good that they, you know, they've collaborated with...
Weinstefan.
Yeah.
And they've only ever done two other collaborations, haven't they?
Weinstefan. The one with Sam Adams.
Yeah, the what was it in the fancy bottle?
Utopia?
No, not Utopia.
Utopia was it's a Sam Adams special.
Yeah.
I got you one.
Infinium.
Infinium.
That's it.
I like to think that a few of us at this table had a bit of a part to play in that in the Unificator, which is a collaboration with Weinstefan and Temple, because... a few of us worked very hard in making sure that Frank from the lead brewer of Weinstefan had a pretty nasty hangover while he was brewing that beer. So,
So did we help?
Was that like a Doppelbock or something? I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
I really liked it as well. Yeah. And also the food at the temple was amazing.
Mm. I haven't been down to the brewery.
Welsh Road.
Yeah, so I guess...
next year.
Ron and Renato are both like fans of German styles because they brew a fair few different German styles, and this one's German style, well, sort of inspired by German style.
So what's it inspired?
So what's this the style? Is based on the Berliner Weiss.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Except they gave it that color using hibiscus and cranberries.
Because I can definitely taste the cranberry.
But yeah, like Berliner Weiss is that classic Berlin originated sour style beer. Lovely style as well.
Yeah, and there's been some. It's actually like it's sort of a good way to start talking about Aussie sours as well, because the first one that pops into my head is the Watermelon Warhead, the Warhead.
Yep.
From Feral, which is a Berliner Weiss.
I think for a lot of Australians, it's the beer that really got them into sour beers. I mean, I remember like before that, I mean, like 2 years ago, it would be really easy to get a bottle of Canteon like year round.
Yeah, you'd know, like, you'd, if you went to the right spot, you'd be able to get one. Like,
whereas nowadays, it's like there's like a three-week window almost once they come in.
Demand's so huge these days.
Yeah. Which, and like, I think the good thing about what we're doing today is there's just to show the fact that there's so many other incredible sour beers and
not just Canteons.
I mean, Canteons are great, but not all of them are that great. There's some of them I'm not a big fan of.
I've never had one.
Controversy.
Yeah. But I think there's other sour beers that are available year round, which
I think a lot of them are often overlooked because Canteon's the well
known one. It has
that
cool factor. Yeah. The beer nerd sort of
because it's Canteon.
Yeah.
They're 115 years old approximately. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. They've probably got their stamp on the market for a good reason. Besides just having good beers, they've also been around for quite a while.
Yeah.
But a lot of the traditional breweries have been around for a while. I think Lindemann's were 1811.
Yeah.
So like they're
but Lindemann's
that's
the
like
other
200
big
years.
One I'd say in Australia when you're getting sour beers, the easiest ones to like the easiest one to get would be Lindemann's.
Or Timmermans.
But you got to be careful when buying Lindemann's and Timmermans. Is like a lot of the stuff you get in Australia is the sweetened stuff. It's not actually that sour, but if you can get like the...
Yeah, I mean, there is a sort of the perception that like fruit sour beers, chick beers sort of thing, you know, like...
Yeah, because I think because a lot of the ones that are easy to get, like you look at the Lindemann's Creek, the one that's easy to find in Australia, and that's sweetened. Whereas if you get like the Creek Cuvée... Cuvée Rene, like that is just this incredible, like just incredibly sour, like face puckeringly, you know, just delicious sour. And it's not, I wouldn't call that a girl's beer.
Yeah, I mean, the, like,
What is a girl's beer?
I mean, we mentioned before the Petrus, and I thought that's one of my favorite of the fruit style ones because it has that perfect balance of sweetness and, tartness and sourness.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
But I mean, bringing it back to Berliner Weiss, I think it's a great style for Australia in particular because it's so warm here in the most
light
of the year,
body. It's not super sour. It's almost more tart than sour, right?
Yeah, like, it's tart. It's light usually. It's like usually 5 or lower.
Yeah.
Traditionally 3%, but our ones have been 4 and over.
Yeah.
And we've seen a few of them. Like you said, the Warhead, The Cephalopod, was one. The Cavalier
Berlin Advice
came out recently, and that was pretty good.
I really like that.
Yeah, same.
Yeah,
I think the reason they work so well in Australia is because of the refreshment factor. I mean, the acidity.
The climate,
yeah. The acidity works so well to cleanse your palate, and also just there's nothing else better in the heat, I think, than either a really hoppy beer or a really sour beer.
Yeah.
Because the hops bitterness provides that refreshment, as does the tartness for me personally.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you've got like Doc's Electrolyte.
Yeah.
Which had that... like
the Gosa,
Yeah, with that slight saltiness as well, which is like almost like the beer equivalent of a Gatorade or something.
Yeah.
I guess,
like, it's delicious. Because Gosa is similar in style to a Berliner Weiss, but with the addition of coriander and salt, I think.
I think it's like a traditionally sour German beer. It's a Leipzig beer.
Leipzig. Yeah.
So, would it be right in saying that most of the different styles of sour beers are just regionally based, or
I think so. Well, this one certainly is, a couple of the other ones that we're having today.
I mean, as
well,
like a Flemish.
We'll talk about that later, and those are regional.
Even Lambics,
and Lambics are based in Brussels. Ghost is based in Leipzig.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Cool.
I'm not sure.
Ghost is not a term that's quite very de jure at the moment, isn't it? Like, you know, 2 years ago, you wouldn't.
Yeah, well, it's a very strange.
Like, now it's like
I've never had a Gosa, and then I had like three in 1 week.
Because all of a sudden, it's like
Because there was one that came into Australia at the same time as Electrolyte came out. What was it? It was Salty Kiss, I think.
Moylan's? Did Moylan's have one?
Magic Rock Salty
Magic
Kiss.
Magic Rock.
Kicking off, yeah.
I think Feral did one a couple of years ago that was incredibly salty. I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, it was just...
Yeah. That's what I liked about Doc's one, is it wasn't too salty. It was really well balanced.
Well, I mean, the first time I had that was on a really hot day, and it did have that really nice refreshment factor. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Have we talked about this beer very much?
A little bit. Sort of said Berliner Weiss.
Yeah.
What an incredible colour.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I really like, it's a good name for the... I think it's well named, yeah. I get a lot of cranberry.
Yeah.
I
think my... if without being too bitchy, I would have liked it a little bit sweeter, I think. But
yeah, but I don't know. I
think this would be a sour that you could actually drink quite a few of, though.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
definitely
very easy drinking, and even though it's 4%, that's still a little bit more alcoholic than a normal Berliner Weiss would be.
Yeah.
So I think that works in its favour.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you can't always sit down and drink four sour beers in a row, as we're attempting today, though.
I've got to say, I've never really had like a massive session on the sours. As far as back to back.
Yeah, I have. I had one in the 2012 Good Beer Week.
They had
a Canteon session.
Was that Sourfest?
No. That was the 2013 one.
Okay.
The 2012, the Belgian Beer Cafe had a Canteon, taste all of Canteon's beer event, which was sold out. Not surprisingly.
I think that was the first event to sell out of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the sour event. I remember just going there, having so many sours, and my stomach was just so disagreeable afterwards.
Upset.
Yeah.
There's a little wild bacteria.
It was not good. I was meant to. We went to Penny Blue afterwards, and I only stayed for one, and just went back to my apartment. It was just bad.
I think for me, when I go on a holiday for a beer focused holiday, a sour is traditionally what I start off with, because we tend to be drinking quite early in the day.
It's usually what I finish with as well, if I can. It just takes your palate back to zero.
Yeah. And it also, you don't feel too guilty drinking a sour beer at 11:30 in the morning.
I don't feel too guilty drinking any beer at that time.
I've got a sort of a tradition where every time I go to Melbourne, the first thing I have to do after I've got to where I'm staying is go to Bitter Lux and have a sesh.
Yeah.
And a sour beer is a good way to go to start with.
Definitely. It's a good start. I find it, great for starting, great for finishing.
So we're on to our next beer, which is a interesting, not oft-seen style of sour beer called a Farrow.
Far out. Sorry.
Definitely has a lot more sweetness to it than the last one.
Mm. Yeah, I've had it. I haven't had this Faro. I've had one other one before. I wasn't a fan.
Yeah,
this is nice.
I've never had this before.
But this is. I actually find this one's got a bit more sourness than the other one I had. Like behind, it's got quite a sweet, like right up front, and then but it does have. You can taste a bit of that sourness, a bit of that classic lambic sort of character.
And you do get that funkiness on the nose that you would expect from a Brussels-based Gerzerie.
So
is that the official term?
Gerzerie.
Gerzerie.
I like it.
A brewery that does Gerzes. I think that's what Gerzerie. It's called. Yeah.
So what is a Faro?
So a Faro is a lambic blended with traditionally brown sugar. I think this one uses candy sugar.
Mm.
So I was reading the Lindemann's website, and it said that this one's a blend of young lambic, old lambic, and candy sugar.
So in other Belgian beers, they use candy sugar as a brewing sugar. Is this something that they just added after fermentation?
They usually, so traditionally they would put the sugar in just before serving it to you, but,
as like a syrup thing.
Yeah.
Like some of the, like the fruit vice
at beers. So like in Berliner Weiss, you know, they would add Woodruff to your beer before serving it to you.
Yeah, right.
This one, they would add brown sugar to your beer, but these days they artificially sweeten at the bottling stage and then they pasteurize the beer, so there's no more fermentation in the bottle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, okay, because you're adding the sugar to referment.
Yeah.
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 Especially with sort of a wild.
Mm.
Yeah.
This is really nice.
This is, yeah, I quite like it.
Has a nice sort of like a bit of like a toffee sort of brown sugar.
It is quite sweet, though.
It is quite sweet, but like you said, the tartness that comes after that sort of cleans up your palate again.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
I think that it's also fairly different to the other Lindemann's sweetened Gerzes that I've had, in that it doesn't, the sweetness doesn't taste artificial.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Because I think with the sweetened lambics, they use some artificial sweetening, whereas this one they use sugar. So it does taste natural, even though it's still sweetened.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
It provides a bit more of a natural balance, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Quite like this.
I don't think I've had this beer before. It's no. Really nice.
I think I've had it once before. I didn't know it was a sweetened beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like really offended by it because I was like, I just came from, you know, Cantillon, and they had some amazing sour beers, and I thought this was going to be an unsweetened lambic, but yeah, it was better. I thought it was better than the other Lindemann sweetened beers, but
yeah,
at the time I was very disappointed.
So this is a lambic. So you're saying lambics are generally from Brussels? Is that or only from Brussels?
Traditionally. So I think I mentioned it briefly before, but the strain Brettanomyces comes from.
I think we might have talked about this in another different episode, Belgian episode maybe.
When we had the Hansons, I believe.
The Hansen, yeah.
Yeah. So that strain of bacteria is native to the Seine Valley, which is where Brussels is. So all the traditional Gerzeries originated from there. People make Gerz everywhere now, but
the wild yeast is everywhere.
Yeah, because that yeast has been cultured and it's commercially sold now. But traditionally, if you want to just leave your ferment tank open to the wild yeast in the air, you'd have to be in the Seine Valley. And Cantillon and Lindemann's are two of the only traditional Gerzeries left in Brussels.
So how many? So
there are about a dozen, maybe. Okay.
But then there's a lot of blenders as well.
Yeah, and
right?
There's a few blenders as well that buy lambics from different breweries to blend them themselves.
Because that, like Hansen's was like that, yeah?
Mm, yeah.
They're a blender.
But the interesting thing with that is it's not seen as like a... It's not like a contract brew thing or something where it's frowned upon. It's actually quite accepted, the fact that...
Because there's a lot of art in actually blending it.
Right? Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a Tarantino movie, you know.
It's a tip of the hat. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just taking existing things and making your own version of it.
It's quite similar to traditional champagne, I think.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
A lot of champagne houses don't actually produce their own grapes, but buy grapes from wineries, and the actual talent comes in having the palate to make something that's
consistent over different vintages. Yeah.
Yeah.
Legend has it that the Gerd style originated because champagne was discovered, and some guy drinking beer was like, "Oh, I want to do this with beer," and mix a couple of lambics together and made a champagne of beer, so to speak.
Oh wow!
Isn't that Miller's High Life?
No. Nice try.
It's a champagne of beers, isn't it?
It's a champagne of something, I guess.
Well, there's also the Deus, is it? The
Deus. Yeah, so they...
That's really interesting,
That's an actual, like, champagne beer.
Yeah.
Where it's fermented on lees, which is of champagne.
Yeah, they do method champagne wines. I believe.
Yeah.
But that beer is actually produced in two different countries. Like, it starts off...
It's brewed in Belgium, and then it's taken to Champagne.
Yeah, where it's bottled.
They basically treat it from there as if it was a champagne.
Riddle it and everything.
Yeah. Which is really interesting. That's a fun one. It's going to be a lot of that sound.
Yeah.
Especially when we start getting into the unsweetened stuff.
I don't think our producer likes this very much.
No. A bit sweet.
Reminds me of those Fantail. That sweetness really reminds me
fizzy,
of Fantail.
Fizzy sweetness.
No, you know, like that dark sweetness.
Caramel.
And you also can't quite get rid of it off your palate very quickly.
All right, so we've got our next beer. And it's the... how do we pronounce this?
Three Fountains.
Yeah, let's translate it.
This is from probably one of the coolest towns of all time. The town's actually called Beersel.
Beersel.
Town of beer.
Do they sell a lot of beer?
Oh.
I'm probably going to cut that out.
No, you won't.
You're not allowed to.
You need a sound effect for when jokes. Tom makes a really stupid comment. That's my contribution.
Mwah, mwah.
Yeah.
So I think there's at least one more brewery in that town as well. There's BSL, Oud BSL, I think.
Yeah.
So it is in that valley, I think. Near Brussels.
It's very close to Brussels.
Yeah.
Has anyone here actually been to Belgium?
Yep.
Adrian has, yeah.
Very nice. When?
I've been a couple of times, actually.
Oh, wow.
The most recent was 3-4 years ago. Okay. And I went to the Cantillon Brewery, and it was amazing.
Yeah. That's a big one on my beer tour map.
Oh,
places to go, but I'm also a little bit scared to go to Belgium, whether or not I'll make it out alive.
Yeah. I wonder whether I need like a wheelbarrow if I go to Belgium.
I managed to survive twice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Maybe like a rickshaw.
Yeah, rickshaw. Well, they do oddly enough, they do bicycle tours of Belgium. I'm not sure how well you're cycling by the end of it. But I'd like to do that. I think, Luke mentioned that on his podcast.
So this one's an Oud Gerz. What is the Oud?
Oud Gerz is...
It's like the alien from Doctor Who with the balls and the tentacles, right?
It was named after that, I think. when the Doctor went back in time and brought one of those to Brussels.
And brewed beer.
Yeah. No, it's named because it's like an old-style Gerz, because these days they do sweetened lambics. So the old-style Gerzes became known as Oud Gerzes.
It's like the Belgian version of Tui's Old.
I think it's a little bit better.
Yes.
I know it's country, I want to live in there.
It's the Belgian Tui's Old.
And
it's a blend of... usually a Gerz is a blend of different years of lambic.
Is it like 1, 2 and 4 or something?
It's not always the same.
It's not always the same. This one is 1, 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And usually the middle-aged one, usually 18 months, is the most makes up most of the
most
the beer.
Of the blend. Right.
And then a little bit of the young to provide fermentable sugars for the bottle, and a little bit of the old for sourness, depth.
Yeah. Interesting.
Earthiness, definitely.
This has been one of my go-to sours for this year.
It's delicious, yeah.
I sell a lot of these at work because I recommend it to a lot of people and I drink a lot of them.
Mm. Do you get any of the other styles, like the Creek?
You
can, but you don't.
But I haven't because the other ones available to us at the moment are quite expensive.
Yeah, right. They have it. They have the ones available in Australia. There's like a bunch of ones in like big bottles. There's the Hurst, which is like, I think that's going for like $70 or $80 a bottle.
What?
And there's another one that's called like the
Armand and Tommy,
which are the two sons.
Yeah.
Who now run the brewery, and it's like they each made their own blend, and then they blended the two together, or somehow the two of them made the blends.
Yeah.
So it's like the two sons beer, and that one's about the same price.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like that ad, the Twix brothers, you know.
The rival
the
Twix.
Rival Twix.
I don't know that one.
Then there's the Golden Blend as well.
Yeah.
It's a different one that's available. But this is just the straight up Oetker's, and it's delicious.
Yeah, these guys are really good.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I think if people say, oh, do you have any Canteons? And I don't. This is like a beer I like to recommend to people. When I was reading up about these guys as well, they were like a brewing, like, and then they the brewery shut down, or they rebuilt a new brewery, so they were blending for a while, and they're now brewing their own again.
And brewing and blending.
The other thing I read that was really interesting was that they're saying on 2009 they had like a faulty batch because it was overheated, and so the bottle started exploding, so they made like an eau de vie out of it, which I reckon would be really interesting.
That'd be very interesting to potent.
Yeah.
I noticed so it was bottled on the 10th of February 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good until the 10th of February, 2022.
Yeah,
so it's got
That's pretty conservative.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the most interesting thing about sour beers is definitely the ageability of them.
Mm.
One of the big differences between bars in Australia and bars in Europe is that beer bars in Europe usually have a cellar of aged lambics, and I mean, admittedly, they're incredibly expensive because they are so rare, but they look really impressive and I would always like to try one when I'm there.
Yeah.
Having never had the money to fork out that much for a bottle, I'm yet to. But it's one of the more interesting things about sour beers, I think.
Yeah, the thing that I found interesting is like when we were at Bar 420 in Rome, and they had like one of those Vintec wine fridges things as their like sour beer display with all their aged sour beers, and all of them were covered in like this funky mold.
Nice.
Like it was like so wild bacteria that it was escaping out of the bottle, and they're all like, you know, all the ones in the wrappings, everything had this weird growth over all of it. It was at first it seems weird, but then you think like that's actually pretty cool.
So because you'll see like on a lot of sour the bottles that the dates for the expiring will be way off into the future.
Yeah. I mean, 10 years is pretty low. I think Boone does 20.
Yeah.
I think most of them have 20. As Gers.
Mm.
Has anyone actually aged a bottle of sour here?
No.
I haven't had one long enough.
I haven't had the strength to keep it away.
Yeah, Canteon says to be drunk preferably within 20 years after the bottling date. Preferably.
You've got a bit of leeway there, you know.
Yeah,
if you
like,
happen to forget your Canteon.
Give or take 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I might try and do it. I actually have
a
fair bit of Canteon at the moment in my private possession. But if I can hide from myself...
I might actually get my dad to hold it for me, because my dad's an avid red wine collector.
Oh, excellent.
And has a really
Does he have a cellar?
Yeah, he has a cellar.
He's got really quite a large selection of aged red wine. Mm. So I know that if I ask him to hold six bottles for me, that he won't give them to me unless he dies. Before the next 10 years, so touch wood that doesn't happen. If you're listening,
unless you're really desperate for it,
off him off.
All my sour beer.
Not to mention, you know, the thousands of dollars worth of red wine just to give me my sour beer.
So, where do your parents live?
Address and everything.
Address,
So, what do you guys think of the three fountains?
Oh, I really like it. Yeah.
Great. Yeah,
I like that we're calling it Three Fountains.
Mm. Well, I think it's easier that way.
Then mispronounce it.
Yeah.
I think it's easier that way.
I think this is what I look for in a sour beer. I mean, I couldn't fault it if I wanted to, really.
Although it sounds weird to say, sometimes with some straight Gerses, the blend seems a bit young, or
like it's
lacking a bit of depth or something, where I find this is spot on the money.
Yeah, this is very balanced. Like, there's sourness, there's body, there's...
Yeah. That bit of slight woodiness.
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing about blending lambics, like different vintages of lambics, is that no single lambic is the same because of, you know, the wild yeast.
Yeah.
So if you're a brewer or a blender, you would have to taste so many different lambics and get like the right proportion and mix them together to get consistency every year. And I would hate to do that job. No, I won't. I would hate to do that job.
If any Gerseries are listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, if you did that as a job and you came home, what would be your knockoff beer? Be like an Imperial Stout.
Yeah, Imperial Stout or something. Yeah, Belgian Dark Strong.
Belgian Dark Strong would go down pretty
well. Yeah.
You start munching on hops.
Hop cookies. Yeah. And the I hate to preempt it, but the next beer that we're having, I was reading the website. Apparently, the brewer, Jean Van Roy, at Cantillon, tastes 10 or more different lambics and picks 5 or 6 to blend together to make this next beer.
Wow.
Which is pretty crazy.
The palates of these people is just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
You think of...
What's the output of some of these breweries? I imagine Cantillon's like a fairly big operation.
No, it's not.
No?
It's pretty low. And when I went there a few years ago and asked them about, are you looking to expand? And they're like, no, we're just struggling to keep up with demand at the moment. So that's possibly why it's so expensive.
Yeah.
Is that there's so much demand and they're not going to expand.
I don't think that Cantillons are that expensive. When you look, most of the other sour beers we get are in smaller format bottles in Australia.
Mm.
So when you look at the price difference, they're a little bit more expensive, but not
I think they used to be cheaper.
For example, the Three Fontaines and Three Fountains sours in the same size bottle are more expensive than the Cantillons.
Yeah.
In the same size bottle.
How do they match up in Belgium? I mean, not just, I mean, because obviously Australia has a very complicated tax system on alcohol. Do sour beers particularly stand out in Belgium, or are they just...
Stand out what, price-wise?
Price-wise.
No, they're about the same.
About the same, yeah.
And because they're usually 5 or less from the regular ones, they're usually really cheap.
Which is pretty impressive when you think that in that one bottle there's at least 3 vintages and...
Mm.
The amount of wastage of a brewery that doesn't use, what did you say, 5 of the vintages they try?
Well, it's not that they don't use it. Like Liam said, they on-sell it or they use it for other blends.
Yeah.
Or whatnot.
Continue to age it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many different styles does Cantillon produce?
Quite a few now. Probably
4 or 5 in the main, and then
probably like a dozen year round.
A dozen year
but
round.
Like,
then there's
yeah.
like what is it called? Pronounced Swan Day.
Swansea, I think.
Which is like the Cantillon
Day,
where they have they brew a special.
It's like an anniversary ale for them.
Yeah.
And I've never tried any of those, but I would love to.
Yeah,
I think we need to get to a point where we can have an Australian venue for one of those. Cause, I mean,
what, Cantillon Sydney? That would be amazing.
Well, I mean, like, Swan Day is like an international thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's like 5 or 6 different places in Italy, for example.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
The US has like 20, 30 different bars involved.
You're right.
So let's get one in Australia.
Yeah, like, why can't we get one? Like, break a bit off for us, man. Like, I think it'll be really incredible. I mean, if you look at we might have mentioned in another episode when the Michelin bar in San Fran opened up and they were tapping a different Cantillon every hour and we have to fight tooth and nail to get like a bottle.
I
think they have increased in price in the past couple of years though. I remember them being fairly cheap here. So and that's part of
I'm still happy to pay it.
Demand. I'm still happy to pay it as well.
Look at the checkout the cork on this one. Like, where's it gone?
Yeah, because I do normally sweat through the cork a little bit when you take the cap off. Don't
quite they? Quite a bit. Like, that's a gnarly fucking cork.
Wow. Yeah, this is one of those beers that
you probably could get a bit out of it.
Suck
like
it out.
Squeeze
yeah.
it.
I'm not sure if the last one was, but this one was capped and corked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. Oh, yeah. No, the Three Fountains was just corked.
Was just corked. Yeah. It had the, like the cage
champagne.
Yeah.
Bowl.
Yeah.
The Fano was capped and corked.
Yeah. Lindemans and Cantillon do crown and cork.
Yeah.
So we might
just to be sure.
Come on to the Cantillon now. I think this is one of my just all-time favourite, not just sours, but beers, I'd say.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Just one of the classics.
So it's the Cantillon Gers 100% Lambic Bio.
Mm.
What's the bio mean?
It means it's organic.
Fair enough.
La-dee-da.
Adrian's the go-to man.
Yeah.
I'm just reading labels.
The rest
going,
of us were just stunned that you actually needed clarification.
Yeah, okay. I was just like, just checking.
Pause.
Okay. I'm going to edit that out. Make myself sound smarter.
That has a lot more on
you're
the nose.
You're going to need to edit a lot out. Yeah. So I'm doing yourself sound smarter.
We should just edit myself in life. Like, be nice.
Tom Sensor.
Wow. That's
I think
really
it was
good.
The first sour beer I had, or the first one that I really like. Went, wow, I love sour beers.
I remember giving you this beer.
Yeah, you gave me this beer.
I remember like in the early days of the tap house in Sydney, I ordered one of these bottles, and it was way cheaper than it is these days. And I hated it. I was like, oh, this is shit.
Were you into sour beers at the time?
No, I wasn't. It was like my first one, and then I came back a couple of weeks later. I was like, I got to try that again. Because I just, you know, you couldn't stop thinking about it. It was just so different from everything else.
Did you look
else.
Into it as to whether it was supposed to taste like that, or...?
No. Well,
oh, yeah, did you think it was off?
No, I didn't think it was off. I had a feeling it was, like, part of the style, but I was like, this is just
not
isn't working.
Right?
Yeah, it just isn't working for me. Mm. And I guess, like, beer, it is an acquired style, an acquired taste.
Yeah.
And
it is, like, whenever I've worked somewhere that has had a sour beer on tap, the amount of people who come up and go, I think this beer's off.
Hmm.
And then you go, yep.
Yep, I'll take the rest of your glass, please.
But yep, that's the point. Yeah.
Well, wasn't there the Italian tap takeover where that wasn't specified on the board at the tap house that lover beer is...
Yeah, it's a sour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had a Russian Imperial Stout that was a sour Russian Imperial Stout. Yeah. And, yeah.
Admittedly, I mean, if I saw Russian Imperial Stout on the board and it tasted sour, I would probably take it back if I didn't know anything about the brewery.
Yeah.
So
that's a great brewery, actually.
Yeah,
Lovabeer
is really interesting.
That was the Papesa sour Russian Imperial Stout.
I was a
big fan of that.
Yeah, that was good.
I've had about three different Lovabeers.
Me too.
Yeah, really nice.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I haven't been checking in.
So, what was your sort of, what were your sour epiphanies? I think, Bron, you already talked about yours.
Yeah, Lindemann's Peach Dress.
Lindemann's Peach Dress.
Admittedly isn't that sour, but it did start me on the...
On that
path of knowledge towards, something purely sour.
Yeah. What about you guys?
The Creek Renee.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's a bloody sour one.
Nice.
Cat's Bum.
Yeah, that was one of those ones where, when I first started doing treks to buy beers, and I was like, wanted to try a whole bunch of different styles. So I remember asking someone, I was like, "All right, I want to try a sour beer." And the guy's like, had this like pitiful look in his eyes, like, "Oh god."
Wonder who that was.
I wasn't gonna say, but and that's one of the first sours I had.
Yeah, nice.
Probably second would have been
this
one.
Yeah,
now.
Can't
yeah.
See And have you said Adrian or?
Yeah, it's this one.
This one, yeah.
I hated it at first, but came around pretty quickly.
By
to
the
it.
End of the 750ml bottle, I think that this was definitely my sour epiphany. I think I might have had the Petrus before it, but I liked it. But I was like, yeah, that's cool. But then I had this one. I was like, whoa, holy shit, this is amazing. And I think I think you gave me.
Yeah, I remember we cracked it at a brew share once.
You might have been there.
I think I was. Yeah.
One of those fabled pump house brew share nights.
Yeah. and our producer was just saying that for him it was there was a keg at the tap house of little creatures puffing Billy that had gone sour.
How was that?
In a good way?
That was delicious.
In a good way? Wow, I didn't even have that one. Yeah, damn.
Sour in a good way.
I kind of get really cranky when people go like, oh, this beer's gone off, so now it's great. It's like, reminds me of that shit beer nerds say. Yes. Like, this beer's off, unless it's a sour, then it's great. Like,
just to clarify,
sort of like Red Oak. Like,
doesn't know, there's a Crafty Pints video that is called Shit Beer Geeks Say.
Yeah. I'll link to it.
If you listen to this, yeah, if you listen to the podcast.
I think anyone who drinks beer needs to, like, of, you know, is getting into, like, good beers, needs to watch that.
And we've all been guilty of saying those exact lines. Oh, yeah. Those exact lines.
In fact,
lines.
This podcast is, I actually just make it by cutting up that video and just, like,
yeah, match it together.
That's it.
I know sometimes
just words from that.
Sometimes
we don't actually
when
exist.
I get really drunk and I'm drinking too much hop hog, I, like, definitely channel my inner...
Hop hog.
Oh, galaxy. No, I think my favourite is like, yeah, the brewer just had a divorce. You can really taste it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a funny video.
I don't think there's been a beer today that I have not liked.
I didn't mind the Pharaoh.
First of all, first sip of the Pharaoh, I just didn't like it at all. But
I think once you settle into it, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it'd be great as a like a matched beer, like you could do
with a dessert or something. With yeah.
On the website, that's what they on the brewery's website. That's what they recommend matching it with.
I think sours do match really well, particularly with different styles of cheeses. It's classic, like, but it's a really good food.
Yeah,
food beer style in general. Sour beers.
When I was doing my I'll bring it up, but when I was doing my my research about Pharaoh, it said that I think it was Baudelaire that said it's the drink that you is the beer that you drink twice, implying that it tastes like it's been through the sewers and re-fermented. It's probably what Lee's thinking.
Right, we might take a quick break while we finish these and get on to the and then we'll go to the
because Nick's calling me, so I need to
okay, yeah, cool. Is he downstairs? Or...
yeah, he's downstairs.
Okay, I'll be down in a second.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it was Baudelaire.
We'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with two more beers.
Your keys are just over there.
And Nick's just going to have to sit there quietly and listen to us. Yeah.
This is on the Bocor Brewery website. They have, like, some beer recipes.
All right, so we're on to our next beer. So this one's probably the darkest one we've had tonight.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's the Cuvée de Jacobin Rouge from, what's the brewery name?
Bocor.
Yeah. Yeah, so I love this style. It's a Flanders red. Flanders red.
Yeah, we've moved from Brussels to Flanders.
To Flanders.
And this Flanders red is a West Flanders style, whereas Oudbruin is the East Flanders style.
That's kind of
friendly rivalry between the two different parts of Flanders.
I always thought they were for the most part fairly interchangeable in terms.
No.
So this one is more acetic and more fruity.
Okay. Yeah.
And the Oudbruin is more less acetic and more malty.
Gotcha. Mm. I'm being schooled today, aren't I? Yeah.
That's what happens when I do research.
So this is standard set.
Yeah.
I don't like this.
The idea is that we just take turns and just one of us does research.
Yeah. And the rest of us can go like, whoa!
Wow!
So knowledgeable.
So like, Rodenbach is like the most well-known Flemish.
And that
beer,
to me
right?
is one of my all-time favourite beers.
I like this better.
This is really good.
Yeah, this is really good.
I actually had this on tap recently, a couple of months ago.
When you were overseas?
When I was overseas, okay. Yeah.
I was about to say, where in Australia?
Like, no, sorry.
This has a bit of, like, meatiness to it.
Mm.
Like, it's almost like prosciutto or something.
Prosciutto. Right? Yeah, I was going to say, like, it does.
I just love, what I love about this style is that you just get the, like, the body and sweetness of, like, a red ale almost, but just with that awesome sourness.
Yeah. And it's it is that different kind of sourness compared to, like, you know, the Gerses.
It's
like that kind of vinegar style.
Yeah, like balsamic.
Vinegar almost,
But is that, is it crystal malts or something like that, or...?
I'm not sure. I think I'm not sure what causes the different type of sourness. I know they usually have lactobacillus in it, so that might contribute to
it. I was thinking, like, looking at the colour, it looks like there's some crystal or some...
Oh, yeah.
Definitely some dark malt.
It's definitely, like, a darker
sweetness
style.
But the sweetness would make sense.
Yeah, it's usually, you know, a lot darker than the Brussels, the other sour styles.
Yeah. It's a really nice red colour, but not like a creek, like a...
Yeah. And, I mean, that goes with the region, like, East Flanders, the Oud-Bruin is also a darker sour.
I really like this. Really like this beer.
Yeah.
Really like this style. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I'll go as far to say I'll take this ever run back any day.
Whoa.
Jim's fighting words. Done.
Stupid sexy Flanders.
Does anyone not like this beer?
I really like this beer. Can we just do the intro for this episode, like... Yeah, so this one, I was reading on the website, is, so they're founded in 1892, so fairly old.
Bocor.
Bocor. And this particular beer is fermented and aged at least 18 months in French oak.
Oh, wow.
So, I think Flanders Red, another thing that distinguishes Flanders Red from Oud-Bruin is they're usually aged in oak, whereas Oud-Bruins are aged but not in oak.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Usually, anyway.
Usually, yeah.
Bocor actually makes quite a few different beers as well, don't they?
Yeah, so they make a few, like, I guess, regular beers. Like, they make a Hills, which is probably their most famous beer, and then they have a sour range as well. So they have they have a Gers and a bunch of other styles.
Yeah, only this one and the Gers is the only sour beers I've seen here.
I've never seen any of the other beers at all.
Yeah, I think this is the only one I've seen.
There's the Jacobins.
Yeah,
Gers as well. Yeah, which is quite nice.
That's before 15. So...
You need to take photos. Photos look good.
Yes, they do. At the end, I'll take a photo of all of them together.
30, 15? I don't know. Do Flanders Reds not usually age as well as Gerses? I'm not sure.
Don't know. Roddenbach.
Or this could
They do vintages.
Yeah.
This could just be an old bottle. I don't know.
Maybe. There was also the Heretic Flanders Red. From the US, Heretic Brewing, they did a Flanders Red. That was on tap.
Not sure if I've had it
recently.
How was that?
Pardon? It's delicious.
Yeah, what was it called?
Heretic Flanders Red.
Oh, really?
I think.
Wow.
It's
very creative.
Yeah.
We got like what Shallow Grave.
Yeah, I was expecting like something completely like
an evil cousin.
Yeah.
No, maybe it did have a name.
We have to have like some sort of blood theme or something, right?
Yeah,
like,
I think it might have had a name.
Death.
But it was really tasty actually. That was my pick of the Heretics when they were on tap recently.
Don't believe I had it.
The Miscreant was the name of
Miscreant,
it.
Miscreant, no, yeah. Never had it.
Sounds a little bit too close to Excreant for my liking.
I wouldn't have made the association.
Yeah, no. But now you've said it.
Yeah.
No, I think out of the Flanders Reds and Flanders style sours, I think Roddenbach Vintage is probably my favourite. It's just so nice.
So I've seen Roddenbach's canning beers.
Yeah. I'm not sure how long they've been doing that, but you can get a 4-pack of the regular, the regular Rodenbach original.
Which is still a very nice
flan. It's a very nice beer.
Mm.
That's a flan.
And, you know, you can go to, like, you can go to Meredith Festival and...
with just, Rodenbach cans.
Yeah. Just smash down the Rodenbach.
That'd be amazing.
I would do that.
I would do that, definitely. Give me Gronkou in a can, though, and I'd just...
Vintage in a can, maybe?
Yeah, I don't see that working.
No, neither.
There'd be like 750ml cans.
Yeah.
It's like the Sapporo cans, you've seen those ones?
Yeah. The liter cans.
Yeah. Or Dab, I think Dab comes in a giant.
Dab comes probably in a big can.
Yeah.
If I had cans of Rodenbach, I would make a chicken with it, I think.
Really?
Like,
Rodenbach chicken, okay.
Yeah.
You'd need to wrap it in bacon or prosciutto or something.
Yes! Prosciutto wrapped beer can chicken with Rodenbach.
Yeah, that'd work quite
well. We have to do this for an episode now, you'd realise.
Yeah, you just do a beer match, like a beer cooking episode.
Beer can chicken episode.
Different varieties of beer.
Like a really hoppy one.
I'm not sure if that was heard, but a producer said, "Why wouldn't you wrap the can in prosciutto?" Yeah, funny. You didn't just tip that Jackie Burns, did you?
No, there's some Chinese.
Oh, okay. Chunky bits are the best bits.
Yeah.
Just as the mouthfeel.
So this next beer is possibly the one that I'm most excited for.
Is that my one?
Yeah.
I'm most excited about that as well.
So this is the Madame Rosé from Goose Island. It's a 2012. So Goose Island are a craft brewery from the US.
Or are they? It's actually... Sorry, Tom. Madame Rose.
Burn.
Pronunciation warning on this episode. Everything is incorrect that we're saying.
I'm going to do research next episode, I think.
So, Goose Island, interesting story. They started off as a brew pub in the 80s in Chicago, named after the artificial island on the Chicago River. Yes, I did my research. I don't think they're actually situated on the island itself, but they're right near it.
Yeah.
They're right near the island on the river. And they started expanding in 95, and then they started a second brew pub in 99, and then 2 years later in... No, wait. Sorry. 12 years later... In 2011, same thing, you know.
Yeah.
They were bought out by Anheuser-Busch.
Ooh.
Macro brewery.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of controversy with this brewery. Are they a craft brewery? What is craft, etc.
I think they were pretty well renowned for their beers before they were bought out.
They were, and
they've been copying a fair bit of flack for some international brewers.
And they do. And the weird thing is, when I was in JABF, the line for Goose Island was so tiny compared to the Russian River and all that.
They got shunned.
And it was great for everyone else who didn't care about that, you know, macro bought out thing, because they still had amazing beers.
Yeah.
So...
They just don't have the cool factor anymore.
Yeah, that just doesn't have the cool factor anymore. They're owned by Macro now, so...
So I think a correlation would probably be the Little Creatures in Australia.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely.
Whether or not...
Mm.
And Nugna in Norway.
Yeah.
Yeah, we spoke about last episode.
So I guess before we try this beer, we'll start this collaboration with our friends at Ale of a Time in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And ask them a question... What do you guys think? Do you guys think that Goose Island, do they count as a craft brewer?
Yeah,
that they're owned by a macro, do macro owned
craft brewers brewery exist within a macro brewery? Is that what you're saying?
I think that's a good our way question. To
phrase the question,
So
can a craft brewer be owned by a corporation?
Mm,
because that's essentially what they are.
Yeah. But so, like, I mean, does it come down to does it physically have its own brewery outside of that? Is that part of it, or
what's the creative control that the original brewers had?
So,
but can a craft brewery exist within
a larger
macro
brewing corporation?
So I'm interested to see what the boys have to say about that.
Yeah, definitely. And then feel free to throw us back a question, and we'll talk about it to no end.
At length.
Yeah. And probably not come up with an answer.
Or just disagree, yeah.
Hopefully it's like a less obvious question than that, because that's like the most obvious one. It's like, what is craft? If it's owned by a... Anyway.
I think it's still a nuanced question with some...
I think in this day and age, it's a very apt question to ask.
It is, yeah.
It's also a roundabout question, is that you're never actually going to come to an answer.
Mm. Well, no, that's the thing. It's no,
shh,
no
don't
one
tell
answer.
Them that.
Yeah, I'm giving
an
answer
away.
There is no answer. Anyway.
Yeah.
So what type of beer is this?
So according to Beer Advocate, which is not entirely trustworthy, it's an Oud Bruin.
Okay.
But I think it's just the Flanders-inspired Belgian ale.
Yeah.
And it's also brewed with... Does it say cherries?
Cherries.
Cherries and aged in wine barrels.
Yeah.
It doesn't say what wine barrels, and I tried to do some research. Like, I looked through two Google search results pages.
Two whole pages?
And I couldn't find what wine barrels they were.
Oh, then it doesn't exist.
So,
it's not on the internet, then.
So I'm not sure what actually wine barrels they are.
You do get a lot of wood, I think, on this one. I'm tasting a lot of...
You get that bit of that tannic as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
So it's probably red, right? Like,
it'd be red wine, but
oh wow, that's really complex.
Yeah, it is complex. It's really nice.
Mm.
Yeah, you definitely get that toastiness from the barrel, the tannic sort of from the red wine.
From the red wine, yeah.
Bit of smoke as well.
Bit of smoke.
I think it does fit into that kind of rough Oud Bruin. Neighborhood,
yeah.
Where you know it's malty, it does have that sourness, but not as sour as the last beer that we had.
Yeah.
And interesting twist with the cherries. I really like
that's
it.
That's a really complex beer, isn't it?
The cherries are quite subtle, though. I think like it's. Mm. I actually really like the way cherries work with darker sour beers,
because
unlike a Creek where it's sort of a lighter sour beer being blended with cherries, and the cherries sort of become the dominant flavour a lot. With a darker one, because there's so much more complexity and so much more body and stuff, the cherries just sort of come into the, like, blend into it, come into the background, really subtle notes.
Well, that's what Holgate have done with their Empress, isn't it? They've just done the summer version of Empress
the Black Forest.
Black Forest.
Yeah, I really want to try that.
Yeah,
I know it's not sour beer, but I think that'd be a really good example of that.
And the Illawarra Jerome, which is the sour...
The OG Jerome.
The OG Jerome. The original gangster. That's... run through cherries in the Randall at Tap House. And again, the cherries are like not that pronounced.
Prominent. With the Randall stuff, there's a definite timing factor of when you get the most flavor.
The first couple of days are probably the best way to best time to get. Yeah, depending on what you're going for.
Depends what's in the Randall. Sometimes it takes a couple of days for the flavors to come out. Sometimes it's just all at the start and dies down.
Like if it's hops, you want that first pour, pretty much. Mm. Like, I think.
I think with this beer, it could almost be maybe bourbon barrels as well.
Yeah.
Because...
You do get that sort of smokiness
smoky,
and the charred...
Yeah, that charred wood characteristic, I think.
But there definitely is some sort of red wine character.
Yeah,
I
think it's probably like a Shiraz or a...
But then you get hints of like vanilla and stuff like that, which is something you'd get from like French oak.
Mm.
Like vanilla and cinnamon almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we're saying to all the brewers out there is they need to specify which barrels.
Exactly.
Man, for all we know, this could be aged in like five different barrels and blended together.
Yeah.
Because I'm picking up characteristics from red wine barrels, from bourbon barrels, from like this raw French oak barrels.
And Goose Island do some bourbon barrel aged stuff, don't they?
Yeah. So their most famous one is their Bourbon County Barrel Aged Imperial Stout. I had it and it was amazing. So, I think this one was brewed after they got bought out, and I can say that I mean, I hadn't. I didn't have anything before they were bought out, yeah. but even after they're bought out, they're still fucking amazing. So
yeah, it tastes a shame, right?
You can taste the shame, and that adds to the complexity of the beer.
Shit, beer nerds.
But don't, guys in Melbourne, don't let us influence you with that that last statement.
Yeah. So we might now go on to our recommendations thing.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd recommend, like, maybe we would talk about, like, our favourite sour beer and recommend
sour things and wild things.
Sour things and wild things. Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sour things and wild things to recommend. So, who wants to start?
Well, I mean, beer wise, sours, you know, Canteon. Most things from Canteon I would recommend, but there are a lot of, like, probably most of the Belgian gooseberries are good. Just watch out if, you know, make sure they're not sweetened if you're going for that, or make sure they're sweetened if you're going for that.
Find out what you like and
Outside of that, Watermelon Warhead from Feral and Russian River, their Supplication and Consecration, if you can find it.
Okay. Yeah.
Both incredible.
Liam, you got...
I think it's, like I said before, it's worth trying to find some not as well-known gooseberries and trying some of their wares, like the Three Fontanin, or however we're...
Three Fountains.
Three Fountains.
Yeah. For example, the Jacobins from Bockel. I think just try and... My recommendation is just try and find as many different sours as you can.
Yeah.
There's a lot
and
of them.
Not
most
necessarily
of them
just
good.
Belgian ones. There's, you know, like... I think Mikla's shown the fact that you can get some great sours outside of Belgium. And he might actually source his sour beer from Belgium. And
Perhaps.
Yeah. I know Han Bregariet does a lot of... Oh, not a lot of, but a couple of really good...
Chuck Han sours.
Oh no.
Having said that, actually though, we did try the Han Millennium beer, which was aged about 11 years when we tried it, and that was pretty funky and sour.
Oh really?
It had some definite balsamic notes.
I still have one that you gave me.
Crack it.
Okay. Sweet. Maybe for the new year.
Yeah.
I mean, this part... Oh, shit.
My recommendation would be probably 2 meter tall for something Australian.
Really? But yeah. Also, good one.
Particularly important because the head brewer's just gone on a fellowship around Belgium for sour beer tasting.
Oh, wow.
So
that's really cool.
It'll be interesting to see what they do in the next couple of years.
How do I get in on that?
Yeah. I mean,
I want a fellowship on sour beer tasting.
Yeah, so I think that would be one that I recommend to try for something very, very different to what we tasted tonight, definitely. Mm. But the Mirage Parfait beers.
Yep.
From Boone.
Those are probably my favourite, hands down, sour really beers, nice. If you can get your hands on them. Because
there's some coming into the country relatively soon.
Yeah, they would be my pick of sours.
Delicious, yeah. I think my two favourite sour beers would be... we talked about it a bit earlier, the Rodenbach Grand Cru. Just as one that, like, it's pretty easy to get.
It's fairly easy to get.
And it's just delicious. I can go back to it time after time. It's sour, it's just a great, it's got all that stuff we talked about with Flanders Reds, and it's delicious. It's one of my favorite beers. Full stop. And the other one that I really, really love is the Duchessic, which is the collaboration between Birra del Borgo from Italy and Canteon.
I really enjoyed that.
That's really, really nice. I got a bottle of that stashed away.
I was going to hope you were going to bring that today.
Collaboration episode, that's what you should
do. We'll do a collab episode.
Yeah. Hey, that's a good idea. Thanks for that. We're like running out of ideas here.
Fresh meat, that's what we're all
about.
Do a fresh meat episode.
Like, you know, sashimi or something? Japanese beers!
Okay, let's finish the episode up.
final recommendation, take a bite of the wild slice.
Didn't we recommend that last episode?
No, we didn't recommend it explicitly.
We talked about it. Yeah. So that's by the Pizza Underground, right?
I recommend going to Dallas to watch them play. either the best or worst $13 US you've spent in your life. March 12th. Yeah.
So any Texans listening to this podcast, see Macaulay Culkin's Velvet Underground pizza-themed homage band.
I'd pay $13 just to see the crowd react to that. Do you reckon they throw pizza up on stage, like slices?
Does everyone get pizza at the show?
Yeah.
I don't know. Only if they go underground, I guess.
The club would have to be underground, right?
All right, end episode.
So, sour beers, guys.
Yeah.